I'd worked my way round to a place where I could see Jules Verne Durand, and so was feeling some of the astonishment that the others had experienced a few moments earlier. First at the differences, then similarities, then differences again, between Laterne and Arbonne faces. The closest comparison I can make is to how one reacts when conversing with one who has a birth defect that has subtly altered the geometry of the face, but without the deformity or loss of function that this would imply. And of course, no comparison can be drawn to the way we felt, knowing that we were looking on one who had traveled from another cosmos.
"What of you and your fellow Laternes?" Lodegear asked.
"Split between the Phothosians and the others."
"You, I take it, are loyal to the Ernud-Tro axis?" Lodegear asked. "Otherwise you would not have been sent here."
"I was sent here because I speak better Orth than anyone else. I am a linguist, a junior one, actually. And so they put me to work on Orth in the early days, when Orth was believed to be a minor language. They are suspicious of my loyalty, with good reason. Orhan, as you divined, is my watcher, my minder."
He looked at Arcibald.
"You penetrated my disguise. Not surprising, really, but I should like to know how."
Arcibald looked to me. I said, "I ate some of your food yesterday. It passed through my digestive system unchanged."
"Of course, for your enzymes could not react with it," said
Jules Verne Durand.
"I commend you."
Ignatha Forel had finally recovered enough to join the conversation.
"On behalf of the Supreme Council, I welcome you and apologize for any mistreatment you have undergone at the hands of these young—"
"Stop. This is what you call bullshit. No time," said the Laterran. "My mission, assigned to me by the Military Intelligence Command of the Ernud-Tro Axis, is to find out whether the legends of the Encanters are grounded in fact. The Ernud-Tro Axis, which they call in their languages the Pedestal, is extremely fearful of this prospect. They contemplate a preemptive strike. Hence my questions of previous evenings, which I am aware were quite rude."
"How did you get here?"
asked Paphlagon.
"A commando raid on the consent of the Matterites. We have ways of dropping small capsules onto your planet that cannot be noticed by your sensors. A team of soldiers, as well as a few civilian experts, such as myself, were sent down and seized that consent. The true Matterites are held there unharmed, but incommunicado."
"That is an extraordinarily aggressive measure," said Ignatha Forel.
"So it rightly seems to you, who are not accustomed to encounters between different versions of the world in different cosmi. But the Pedestal have been doing it for hundreds of years and have become bold. When our scholars became aware of the Matterites, someone pointed out that their style of dress would make it easy for us to disguise ourselves and infiltrate the Convox. The order to proceed was given quickly."
"How do you travel between cosmi?"
Paphlagon asked.
"There is little time," said Jules Verne Durand, "and I am no Theor."
He turned to Sura Moira.
"You will know of a certain way of thinking about gravity, likely dating to the time of the Harbingers, called by us general relativity. Its premise is that mass energy bends space-time."
"Geometrodynamics," said Sura Moira.
"If the equations of geometrodynamics are solved in the special case of a universe that happens to be rotating, it can be shown that a spaceship, if it travels far and fast enough—"
"We'll travel backwards in time,"
said Paphlagon.
"Yes, the result is known to us. We always considered it little more than a curiosity, though."
"On Laterre, the result was discovered by a kind of sant named Gerdel, a friend of the sant who had earlier discovered geometrodynamics. The two of them were, you might say, fras in the same math. For us, too, it was little more than a curiosity. For one thing, it was not clear at first that our cosmos rotated."
"And if it doesn't rotate, the result is useless,"
said Paphlagon.
"Working in the same institute were others who invented a ship propelled by atomic bombs, sufficiently energetic to put this theory to the test."
"I see,"
said Paphlagon.
"So Laterre constructed such a ship and—"
"No, we never did."
"Just as Arb never did, even though we had the same ideas,"
Leo put in.
"But on Ernud it was different,"
said Jules Verne Durand.
"They had geometrodynamics. They had the rotating universe solution. They had cosmographic evidence that their cosmos did in fact rotate. And they had the idea for the atomic ship." but they actually built several of them. They were driven to such measures because of a terrible war between two blocks of nations. The combat infected space. The whole solar system became a theater of war. The last and largest of these ships was called Dabin Ernud, which means Second Ernud. It was designed to send a colony to a neighboring star system, only a quarter of a light year away. But there was a mutiny and a change of command. It fell under the control of ones who understood the theorics that I spoke of. They chose to steer a different course, one that was intended to take them into the past of Ernud, where they hoped that they could undo the decisions that had led to the outbreak of the war. But when they reached the end of that journey, they found themselves not in the past of Ernud, but in an altogether different cosmos, orbiting an Ernud-like planet.
Tro, said Arcibald.
Yes. This is how the universe protects herself, prevents violations of causality. If you attempt to do anything that would give you the power of violating the laws of cause and effect, to go back in time and kill your grandfather.
You simply find yourself in a different and separate causal domain. How extraordinary, said Lodagir.
The Lateran nodded.
One is shunted into an altogether different narrative, he said,
with a glance at Fra Jad.
And thus causality is preserved in both the old and the new narratives.
And now it seems they've made a habit of it, said Lodagir.